Welcome to the Consecrating Your Life podcast, hosted by me, Elena Burto, and my mom, Reina Burto. Today we discuss how everyone is on their own spiritual journey and is learning something. Mom and I each talk about things that we've learned recently in our personal lives. We hope that you enjoy this episode.
So I have a question for you. Do people ever act like you are perfect or like this, yes, like unreachable,
yes,
goddess or something?
Yes, it happens to me, you know, and I think it happens with a lot of members of the church that think that because someone has a calling that is visible or mm-hmm. at the general level, it means that their life is perfect. But spoiler alert, tell you, my life is not perfect. I'm not perfect. I'm still learning. I'm still growing.
Yeah, I mean, if people even like treat me a little differently, I don't think it's even just because of your calling, but even before that, like, I swear that like sometimes in our ward growing up, people would act as if our family like never had any issues or something. Or like people will tell me that I'm like the most spiritual person or something. And I'm like, do you even know me? I don't know. But we're all learning. Like even the prophet is learning.
Yes.
And so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today. Like here's an example of what I mean with the prophet specifically. Like I love his teaching about how it's not really complete to just say the atonement. He says that we need to connect Christ to it. So we always have to say something like the atonement of Jesus Christ. But, like, even in his previous talks, like, he doesn't always do that. Or even, like, we've heard phrases like the enabling power of the atonement without connecting Christ to it. You know what I mean? Like, not to say that that's, like, a terrible, like, mistake that people have made or anything. But I'm just saying, like, we are all learning about the Savior and, like, how to be human even. So yeah, that honestly like gives me comfort that even like people like the prophet and the apostles are still very much learning and are not perfect by any means.
Yes. And it shows that the restoration is an ongoing process. You know, that we are learning things little by little. I think that the pandemic was a great example of that, how much we learned from the pandemic about the importance of gathering. And the fact that doesn't matter what happens around us, we can still live the gospel in different ways, and we can still worship. But yes, we are all learning. We are all learning. Even the prophet is learning because he's a human being.
I guess I just wanted to give some examples from my own life. I don't know. It just makes me laugh because I think people that don't know me very well, they think that I'm very like quiet and very calm and don't freak out ever. And I mean, I was telling one of my friends this recently and he was like, have they talked to you for more than 5 minutes? Like, because if you know me, like, sure, maybe on the outside I can appear to be calm or something, but like, I literally have anxiety, aka I'm freaking out all the time. Like always worried about what people think, or just worried about something in my near future. Like, I mean, just for example, like, one time when I was a piano major, this one girl asked me, like, do you ever get nervous when you perform? And I was like, yeah, of course I get nervous. And she's like, you never look like it. And I'm like, I am literally screaming on the inside when I'm performing a piano piece. But, like, yeah, no, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like even people who appear confident aren't actually confident. Like, I won't name names, but you've even told me about some general authorities that are, like, so nervous about giving talks or something. It is really nerve-wracking.
I think everybody is.
Yeah.
You know, the responsibility that you have, and you want to say the right thing, and of course there is people helping you, but still I think everyone gets nervous.
Something that like I'm going through like right now, so I teach seminary as a substitute, and I have taught in the past, like for the past few years since 2020, I've worked like as a music teacher, and I've taught choir as a student teacher, and I even taught at FSY as a counselor. But for a long time, like, I felt like I didn't know what I was doing and I didn't think I would ever get good at this. But this school year, for like the first time in my life as a teacher, I feel like I know what I'm doing. Like, I still am absolutely not perfect at it, obviously, but I don't feel helpless like I used to feel, which is, has been like such a tender mercy for me. Because, I mean, like about a year ago, I almost quit my master's program because like some of the people that I was working with made me feel like I didn't have what it takes. And it was very difficult. Like, I just remember going to church and sobbing and everybody seeing me sob, but it's fine. I don't care if people can see me being vulnerable, but like, still, it was just really hard. It was really, really hard. But it's incredible, like, to see how far I've come. And I give all the credit to the Lord for that. Because, yeah, I don't think I would have had the courage if I didn't know that he was there for me and stuff. Yes. But I also, like a week or two ago, I heard this quote by Elder Bednar, which he gave like in a seminary and an institute training for teachers. And it made me cry. But this is what it says. He says, he's talking about Peter walking on water. He says, "I don't think personally that Peter knew he could walk on the water sitting in the boat. It wasn't until the Savior beckoned him. He had, oh, sorry, it's going to make me cry. He had his gaze fixed on the Savior, and then he went to the Savior, and I suspect he may have even been a little surprised to find himself walking on the water, but he didn't know it sitting in the boat." I just feel like that describes me so perfectly, because I just kind of had to like take that leap of faith without knowing what was going to happen. Like, I didn't know why I was going to grad school in the first place. I didn't know why the Lord wanted me to study teaching and stuff. And yeah, it's like right now I literally feel like I'm surprised to find myself walking on the water in a sense, where it's like, I didn't think I could ever do this and feel comfortable doing it. And so I'm just so grateful that I've been able to learn that recently. So
yes, and I think that what has helped you also to walk on water is that I know that you focus on the Savior, because we have talked about, you know, your lesson plans and the experiences that you're having as a teacher. And I can tell that you don't focus on yourself, you don't focus on telling people how good you are or how much you know, but you try to help the students feel the Spirit. And I think that as leaders, as teachers, as people who have influence on others, because we all do, we should probably do the same thing. We should always focus on helping people feel get closer to Christ. And as we do that, then we realize that we're walking on water. That we can walk on water because he helps us, not because we can walk on water. But it's his power and the faith that we have in him that allows us like to walk on water sometimes and to do things that we didn't even imagine that we could do.
So what have you learned recently?
Well, as you know, I had that calling with the Relief Society, you know, for 5 years and 4 months. And I remember how I felt in the beginning. I felt very inadequate. I felt even unworthy to do it, you know, because we all feel like, what am I doing here? Why me? I know many other people who could do this better. And I even had the thoughts came into my mind about the mistakes that I made in the past. They kept coming to me. And I was even afraid that I would be released because of those mistakes. but then the comfort came, and the Lord will somehow, one way or another, will make me feel like he loved me and that he was going to help me do those things. And then I remember perfectly that one of the things that I would pray for in the beginning, especially and all throughout, it was to feel love for people. I really wanted to feel love for people. And I thought that as I was released, that many of those things will go away. And of course, you don't have the calling anymore. You don't do the things that you used to do. But I have come to realize that the love stays. Because, you know, when I interact with people, even with people that I have never met, I remember those same feelings that I had before. I remember that same love, that I love that person not like the world will define it, but it's a love that allows you to see that person as a child of God, no matter what they're doing with their lives, no matter who they are, that you can see them as a child of God, and you try to see them through that lens. So I'm still learning. I cannot say that I love everyone, but I have those moments, in which I can be with someone that I have never seen before, and I can still feel that love. So we are all learning to love and to follow Christ, and to realize that everything that we do in life, even though it may be hard in the beginning, that if we are, our gaze is fixed on the Savior, like Elder Bednar said, we will be able to do those hard things that we don't even know that we can do.
Right. I think it's just cool because both you and I are kind of like more quiet, I guess, especially like if we don't really know people, like we're not really like the extroverted type that's just going to befriend everybody that we see. But like we've both been able to be more loving. And I think it's because like we know the Savior, we love him. And so we like just want to share that love with other people. Yes.
And I think that it helps to remember that we have taken upon ourselves the Lord, the name of the Lord, that we keep taking it upon ourselves. And that's something that has helped me become less reserved, you know.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, maybe you were a baby, when my husband, your father, was called as a counselor in the bishopric. I remember clearly that I felt like I have to act differently. I have to be more loving to people. I have to welcome people and say hello to them, even though it was not in my nature.
Yes.
In a way, I forced myself just to say hello and to try to at least know their names. And then little by little, you get to know people and you get closer to them. And so many times I have to force myself, even now. If I'm, in a store and then I talk to someone, I try to force myself to pay attention to them and to try to get to know them, even if we're going to interact for only 30 seconds, you know.
It's interesting because I don't really, I don't feel like I have a huge calling right now. Like, I'm on the temple committee in my ward, which is fantastic, don't get me wrong. But I feel like I've still put it upon myself to still talk to people, even though, yeah, again, it's not in my nature either. Like, I really don't like it. But since I'm kind of newer in the ward that I just moved into, I feel like I have to. And there are even people that are more new than me because like the kind of the school year just kind of started. So everybody kind of moved in maybe around the same time I did, but like they're still pretty new. And so it's like, yeah, we're all in the same boat. Like none of us really like know a ton of people, but like we just need each other. Yes. So
yeah, but that is a reality. Many times when we get into an environment like, church, where we go to a new ward, we kind of assume that we are the only new ones, that everybody has been there for a long time. And the reality is that many of them may be new also. And then 2 weeks, 3 weeks go by, and then you are one of the oldest in there.
Right.
What I'm trying to say is that it's better not to go anywhere expecting everyone to be welcoming, because maybe they are also new and they're trying to figure out their place in there. And so if everybody just has the desire to connect with someone, at least one person every time, then eventually you don't feel alone anymore, and you have friends, you have made connections with people, and you know them. And then we realize that we are all in the same need,
Right.
The need to connect with others and to feel the Lord's love also.
Yeah, we are. Something that I have also been thinking about is, like I said, I work as a substitute seminary teacher, which means I have to be on top of my come follow me study, since that's what the curriculum is. And it's just interesting because, before I got hired for this position, I really wasn't studying the scriptures as much as I should have. I was trying to, and I was doing my best, but, now that I, literally have to, I'm just kind of why wasn't I doing this before? I enjoy it so much. I really do. And I always, especially because I'm studying for, not for me, but for my students. And I'm really trying to like figure out, like receive revelation for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm able to like really feast upon the word and like enjoy it a lot. I hope that like even if something changes or even just over the summer where I'm not working, I hope that I can like continue that. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, that just shows that sometimes when we do things for other people, we feel great. Mm-hmm. You know, the feeling is different. Because sometimes we try to do them for ourselves, mm-hmm. and it's great also. But then when we are trying to do something to help other people, mm-hmm. the feeling is different. I think that's the beauty of having callings.
Yes.
You know, or having a job like yours where you are teaching young people, that if you try to focus on them and mm-hmm. you kind of forget about yourself, you are, you know, turning outward instead of inward.
Yeah.
And that gives you a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens. That's why the Lord said that we need to lose ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
And when we lose ourselves, we find ourselves.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's like the story of my life. Like, I was so lost, but I was able to find myself because of serving the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, honestly, like, I will confess that since I'm on the temple committee in my ward, and like they asked our stake to sign up for the Orem Temple House, which is where I live, to be volunteers at the Orem Temple House. Since
open
it's an
house.
Open house, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Whatever, you get it. You get what I'm saying. And like at first I really was like, I don't want to do this because that just gives me anxiety to have to see a lot of people and like smile and say hi. And like, I'm just like, no, it's so exhausting. That's like my least favorite thing. But like, I just like thought about it for a while and I was like what am I doing? Like, honestly, like this is not an opportunity that comes very often, and like, and I really love the Lord and I know that he would want me to do this, like, so I signed up. Like, but yeah, I mean, like, and I haven't done it yet, but like I will do it like in a week or two, and I'm already really grateful that I get to do this because mm-hmm. nobody's a bigger fan of the temple than I am, so even if it's just something really simple of just being an usher at the temple for a couple hours, like, I think it'll be great.
Yes, yeah. Yes. We feel good when we serve.
Mm-hmm.
You've been serving on the Orem Temple Open House Committee.
Yes. We started meeting before the open house started, and it has been great. Because we get to be at the temple about twice a week. We kind of, like, we are in the committee that is coordinating the whole thing. We get to be there for, I think, like 6 hours every time we go,
mm-hmm.
twice a week or so. And it's just amazing to see. I just love sitting at the front desk or the recommend desk and just see the expression in people as they walk into the house of mm-hmm. the Lord. You know, they're happy to be there. Families are together. Friends come together. You see groups of youths, of young adults, you know, older people like me also walking in there and just feeling the spirit, even though it has not been dedicated,
mm-hmm.
because it's the house of the Lord and they can feel it and they know it, and it's just beautiful. It has been a great experience for me,
mm-hmm.
to be able to go there and to be part of that, and to know that we are going to have yet another temple mm-hmm. close by, which is for the city of Orem and parts of Provo and Vineyard. But it's just great.
Mm-hmm.
I love the feeling that I get when every time I go there.
Mm-hmm. I guess actually to close this episode, why don't we like ask each other the question, since our answers like are always going to change with this question, but what does it mean to you to consecrate your life to the Savior, Jesus Christ?
I think that consecrating our lives to the Savior in this topic that we are talking about, it means to understand that life is a process, that our growth is a process, that we are all growing, that we are going to keep growing and learning until, you know, we are ready to live this life, and that everyone is in the same boat trying to learn, and that even though our journeys may be different in a way, we can walk them together. We mm-hmm. can all walk them together. And we can help each other and we can be patient with each other, just understanding that everyone is just trying to learn and to grow. And to try to be a safe person for other people, for them to feel safe with us and to know that every little thing that we do, no matter how little it is, that if we are trying to help other people to come to Christ, mm-hmm. He will magnify our efforts. Yes. And He will help us be an instrument in His hands, mm-hmm. day by day, little by little, step by step, one little step at a time.
Yes, definitely. We're all learning and we're all in the process of becoming more Christ-like. But also, I guess I was just thinking about how, like, dedicating our life to Him, it means to also just, like, acknowledge Him in every aspect of our lives. Just, like, an example, recently I had my seminary kids look up on Google, like, the definition of what their name means. Mm-hmm. And then after they found it, I told them, like, how is your name a type of Christ or a symbol of Christ? And it's just fascinating how, like, literally anything ties back to Him in mm-hmm. some way. So, like, my name means shining light. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, the Savior is the light and the life of the world. One girl, she was like, I don't feel like this applies because my name means, like, lake or reservoir. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, but the scriptures compare the Savior to water a lot because mm-hmm. water gives life to everything. He's the fountain of all righteousness and stuff. Like, it works. Yes. Like, and even, like, one girl, her name means crooked nose, which is a very interesting meaning. But, like, I think that she said something like, but, well, the Savior, like, was broken for mm-hmm. us. Mm. And yeah, I would even take it further and say that, like, He also was, like, just an average-looking person on earth, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, there's just so many ways you can interpret anything.
Yes.
But I just, I really am, like, a happier person when I acknowledge Him in my life. And mm-hmm. I recognize that that all of my blessings come from Him and that I wouldn't be where I was if it wasn't for Him. So I think that that's part of consecrating our life to Him.
Yes, looking for Him everywhere.
Thank you so much for listening. We love you and we hope you know how much we love doing this podcast. Catch us on Instagram @consecratingpod, and we hope that you'll come back and listen next time.